Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Jim Williams, Director of the U.S. Visit Program in the Department of Homeland Security. And joining us in our conversation is Todd Wiseman. Jim, earlier you've talked about the other organizations you're collaborating with, and so I'm curious, how have you collaborated? That's often the challenge in sort of cross-government activities, is getting organizations to work together. How has that come about?
Well, part of collaboration is heavily dependent upon, I would say, constant communication and forcing mechanisms to get people together. We have an integrated project or product team that meets once a week, about 50 people in a room, and that's people from different parts of DHS, including those ones I mentioned before, Customs and Border Protection, Immigration Customs Enforcement, including people like Coast Guard, Citizenship and Immigration Services, as well as people from Department of State, Department of Transportation, Department of Justice, who attend every time. And that's really a working level, broad meeting to communicate about some of the things that are going on. Then we have several other working groups that work on specific issues, of which people from those different agencies are involved. We also have a U.S. Visit Advisory Board chaired by the Undersecretary for Border and Transportation Security, and that includes senior leaders like Janice Jacobs, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Visa Services, Department of State, people from Department of Transportation, Doug Baker from the Department of Commerce, two individuals from Department of Justice, and that's just a collaboration, again, at the federal level. We also have a binational working group with the government of Mexico that works very well. We have starting a group with Canada, and again, that's just sort of government. We also work very closely with the private sector, because what we really want to do is, if you look at going through an airport, we want to be able to meld that experience, enhancing that security as part of the airline travel experience. And the airlines have been fantastic to deal with. I can't say enough good about the partnership from the airlines, the airports, the cruise lines. All of them have recognized the need to enhance security. They know we care very much about what they care about, which is facilitation of travel and facilitation of trade. We know when dealing with the land border that $650 million a day goes over the border between the U.S. and Mexico, and it's double that with Canada. And if we do something that builds Fortress America by just doing it as a federal government mandate to enhance security, the terrorists win. And so we know we have to protect our economic security, and that means that's about partnership. So we need to have collaboration, communication, partnerships with just about everybody, other countries, our government, even eventually dealing with state and local, but also the private sector. I often give a very futuristic example, which is probably not a good one in our lifetime, that someday you may walk into an airport and all you need is your digital finger scan, because that is your credit card and that is your boarding pass that determines your screening level. And that does verify that you've left the country, and it provides you all the benefits you need, because when it comes down to it, it's about identity verification and identity management, making sure you know who that person is and attribute to them the right either benefit or the right level of screening.
How are you training the employees, both within DHS and any related cross-agency, to use the new functions, the technology, as well as the biometric capabilities of U.S. Visit?
Well, as we begin to roll out a particular increment or our next phase of U.S. Visit, we always look to develop a team together who would decide what's the best way to train. And we also want to try and fit that training within what is a reasonable schedule. And we test the training, too, because ultimately when we're delivering technology or delivering business process change, it's something new. It's a change, and it has to be accepted by the users. And our change and our training about that change is about both how to use the technology if you happen to be a government official, but it's also, in a way, training our passengers. We put out videos to tell people what the procedures are going to be like, showed them in airports, on airplanes, so that people could assist themselves in terms of getting through the process. And I think that kind of outreach and the training and awareness really helped everybody, because it made the learning curve not steep in terms of being able to smoothly implement this change. So whenever you're talking about a change, training is critical, and training in the way that people want to hear it.
You talked a little bit about privacy earlier, but how do you address the privacy concerns of people coming through the U.S. Visit system?
Well, we've been very pleased with the kudos we've received about privacy, because we pay special attention to it. It is one of our four primary goals. The U.S. Privacy Act and the E-Government Act, which contains privacy protection provisions, don't apply to foreign visitors today. Working with, again, Nuala O'Connor Kelly and the rest of DHS, we made the policy decision to apply it anyway, because we wanted people to feel safe. in terms of giving us that information. What that means is that we publish systems of records notice in the Federal Register. We publish our privacy principles. And we operate in very bright sunshine of day, answering all those basic privacy questions that anybody would want to hear. And those questions are, what information are you collecting? How long are you keeping it? Who are you sharing it with? And what are they doing with it? And how do you have privacy protections in there? And I think this is important. I've often said in talking to groups, if you've ever been through the Spy Museum, they have a survey up on the wall. How many Americans think the U.S. government is keeping a secret database on them? What percentage of Americans? And the answer was 67%. So I assume that if 67% of Americans feel that way, think about what our foreign visitors feel about what we're doing. And so we have tried to operate extremely openly about privacy, and we're vigilant about it. We have a privacy officer who works for me, Steve Yonkers, who does a great job. He's been a little bit like the Maytag repairman, waiting for the onslaught that really hasn't come. We've had very few letters. Mostly people feel like the husband and wife fingerprints got mismatched or mixed up in the system, or people writing to us for other things. I think what CBP, Customs and Border Protection, has done in terms of their professionalism initiative and in terms of what we've done to convince people they'll be treated with respect, their information will be treated with respect, has really helped to lower those types of complaints.
You mentioned earlier that U.S. Visit is really designed to positively affect trade and tourism. Are you seeing any evidence of that through the recent efforts that have occurred?
Well, actually, yes, Todd, I think we have. At the land border where we implement this, we only implement it for those people who go into what's called secondary processing. That's a small percentage of people coming through land borders. But as we did this, there was very, very much concern that we were going to slow down trade and travel to land borders. And in fact, at all of the top 50 land borders, which covers about 94% of the people coming across the land borders, which out of that about 450 million, maybe half a billion people, that's probably 350 million people a year. So everybody was concerned about what we were going to do there. But in fact, what we've done in every one of those 50, we have accelerated the processing of people. One of our best examples is Laredo, Texas, where prior to U.S. Visit being put into secondary processing, somebody who had to come in and get a visa, it was taking about 12 minutes per person. Well, we put in some other procedures to print out an I-94 in a pre-populated way, whereas before the person, either the officer or the visitor, had to handwrite it and fill it out. Now that we're printing it out automatically, that 12 minutes has gone down to about 2 minutes. So we're very proud of that we have enhanced security and expedited people. And that's our ultimate goal. We're actually building a strategic plan that Congress wants us to build. And that is to look at what is a comprehensive view of what a 21st century immigration border management enterprise should look like, looking across all of the different agencies, across the different constituencies, and say, what should this look like in the 21st century? How can we expedite all of these good people who want to come to America and at the same time enhance security? And that's what we're developing right now. We think the benefits of investing in the borders is enormous. When you look at the competitiveness issues that are necessary in terms of efficient travel and trade, what we can deliver by just thinking about some of these busy ports of entry, if we could cut the lines in half, just imagine what it does in terms of the economic benefits and also the benefits of the intangibles. We want people to come to America to learn about America and export America's values. And in order to do that, we have to be something where it's easy to get here. And that's really what we're focusing on.
Can you tell us about the plans underway to centralize the management of screening and credentialing programs across DHS and specifically within Border and Transportation Security?
Yes, that's in the President's FY06 budget that he delivered to Congress on February 7th. And he's proposed an Office of Screening, Coordination, and Operations. And it's really something that gets at the reason why DHS was created, which is really to integrate functions and operate more effectively and more efficiently. And where we have different screening going on right now across DHS, we need to be able to leverage that capability and leverage that capability for efficiency purposes so we don't have many different institutions, whether they be Coast Guard or Citizenship and Immigration Services, TSA or Customs and Border Protection, building duplicate facilities unnecessarily. And also doing it in a way that leverages it across DHS so that we can effectively share information. As the 9/11 Commission said, connect the dots. We want to be able to do screening in a consistent manner and not screen that same individual with one set of screening tools, say, and then do it a different way for a different individual who's there for a similar purpose. I think we also look at the opportunity of the Screening Coordination and Operations Office, and I think Secretary Michael Chertoff completely agrees with this, as I've heard him already speak, that this is, you know, part of the reason why DHS was created, is to look for this integration where you can start to leverage common capabilities. And when bringing these programs together in a centralized mode, the key to this is to be able to make the missions in the field more efficient. I don't believe in centralization for centralization's sake. I believe you do it so that you can enhance the mission of all of those field officers who have a job to do. And we can deliver them operational support services more efficiently and be more effective in terms of information sharing. So I think that's part of the promise. It's in the President's fiscal year 06 budget. And it also has other things in there about combining registered traveler programs. And from the standpoint of a traveler, we look forward to the day when if you want to be an international registered traveler and a domestic registered traveler, you can be screened once. And you can be, if you're flying from Charles de Gaulle Airport again into Dulles Airport, and you want to come in, you want to be an international registered traveler, that becomes something where you could register for that. But if you wanted to spend a day in D.C. and then fly up to New York, you're also a domestic registered traveler. One enrollment, one screening. And you start to leverage that capability. And people who are travelers will appreciate that because it really goes to the government trying to act in the view of how a person wants you to act. They want the government to act based upon who they are, not how the government is constructed. In the 90s, there was a lot of focus on customer service and focusing on the customer. And I think that's a great thing. I had the opportunity to serve under Charles Rosati, Todd, as you know, at IRS, a man who, frankly, is one of the smartest people I've ever met and really knew how to focus on this. And I think focusing on delivering government services so that it looks like one government and not separate stovepipes to the traveler was important. I think what happened on 9/11 then took us into the mode where we had to act as one government for security reasons. As Secretary Ridge used to say, we're no longer in a need to know, we're in a need to share. Now, so we need to be able to share with adequate privacy protections, but share in order to have effective security. And at the same time as we're doing this, we're meeting that goal of being able to act as one government from the customer standpoint. So acting as one government for security against the bad people, acting as one government, that horizontal government, to really act the way the citizens would expect the one government would operate.
That's an interesting point about one government. How will U.S. Visit be affected by advances in technology? We'll ask Program Director Jim Williams for his thoughts when our conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.